This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Zona Plus, an effective non-drug treatment for high blood pressure. It's a safe, easy way to lower your blood pressure naturally, and it's so effective it works for 9 in 10 people. The Zona Plus is a high-tech smart device that guides you through a patented therapy that's personalized to your unique physiology. To find out more, go to tryzona.com or call toll-free 888-408-6141. As a listener to Intelligent Medicine, you can get $50 off and free shipping. Just use the coupon code Hoffman at checkout at tryzona.com. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Once again, it is time for our weekly Q&A with Layla. Time flies when you're having fun, and it's been kind of a short week. Here we are again.
Yeah.
Having a discussion about questions that our listeners send to us via radio program at AOL.com. Capably assisting me today, Hoffman Center nutritionist Layla Mutin. And she also is the author of her own podcasts via drhoffman.com. How's it going, Layla?
Okay, Dr. Hoffman. Counting down till spring. How are you?
Yeah, well, spring has sprung almost.
Right.
And, you know, the typical for March, erratic temperatures here in New York.
Yeah.
One weekend it's 70, the next weekend it's like 19.
Right. With the wind chill factor, feels like 7.
Right. And, you know, so it's kind of yo-yo temperatures. People getting sucker punched because they think they can walk around in shirt sleeves and it's freezing.
Mm-hmm.
Alternatively, on a really warm day, people are wearing their snorkel jackets. So
right, which, yeah, people don't listen to the weather, I think. I'll find people wearing parkas when they know it's going to hit 68.
I think people dress for the season rather than the weather report. So, So, any... hot news to report? Anything new in our either in the story feed or comments that we
actually
wanna...
we've got a nice comment here from Joel. Do you remember when one of our podcasts, Dr. Hoffman, on leg cramps, and you were talking about Hot Shot?
Right.
Well,
which is, by the way, it's a product. It's a product
it's
that's
a product.
Used by athletes.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea is, I mean, just to review that, it's the idea is that it gives you a hot shot of hot pepper sensation in your mouth, which by distraction may take the starch out of a muscle cramp somehow. It's sort of an autonomic reboots your nervous system in some way when you get that stimulus to your vagus nerve, I guess, through your mouth.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
It's like a form of distraction.
Mm.
Well, okay.
Yeah.
So Joel is 79 years old, and he says, about a year ago, I was told about a formula for leg cramps called Stop Leg and Foot Cramps at stoplegcramps.com. It's comprised of organic apple cider vinegar and natural ginger and garlic juice.
Mm. Oof. Okay, so that's a little bit like the chili or the capsaicin.
Yeah. Garlic juice, you had stop right there.
Wait, do you take it internally or do you apply it to your leg?
No. In specific proportions based on an old Amish remedy.
Okay.
So when I get them, I hobble down to the kitchen and I take a capful of it and a few ounces of water.
Okay.
In less than 2 minutes, the cramps are gone.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Don't know why it works, but it astonishes me that it works that fast.
Where do you get the stuff?
At stoplegcramps.com.
Wow.
Cool. And it's based on an old Amish remedy.
Okay.
Wonderful.
Right.
Wonderful. Thank you, Joel.
So, apropos of that, I remember, and I haven't commented yet on my radio show or, you know, in any of our postings, but recently read a study which suggests that nocturnal leg cramps are not alleviated that much by magnesium. You know, we tend to throw magnesium in the equation when we hear cramps.
Yeah.
So I guess in that experiment, they didn't find that it was that helpful. But I have to say that for a certain subset of people with leg cramps, taking more magnesium is helpful.
Yes.
Although I got to say that I can get leg cramps during a race on a hot day
whether I'm hydrated, whether I take mineral formulas, there's a certain point at which muscle fatigue may cause leg cramps. You just get into that red zone of muscle metabolism.
And if I may make a comment for women who have leg cramps, did you wear high heels that day when you don't normally? That can cause leg cramps, especially in your calves, your feet. So that might
And there's some studies on nocturnal leg cramps in women in pregnancy, and B vitamins seem to help that, which is an interesting subset. So before we get into our usual questions and dip into our email bag, this is momentous. This is a story from Science Daily, one of my favorite news sources. Sulforaphane, a phytochemical in broccoli sprouts, ameliorates obesity.
Huh?
Whoa, that's huge. Because we now know, you know, sulforaphane, we have it in a product called Brocco. We used to use Broccomax. We switched to Oncoplex. Mm-hmm. Oncoplex is a pure source of sulforaphane from glucoraphanins. And sulforaphane, I've written some articles on it for its cancer-preventive properties. There's even some neuroprotective properties. And even there's one amazing study in autism where they found that giving sulforaphane ameliorated the autism. This is a study which says that experiments with mice demonstrate that sulforaphane ameliorates obesity. Great. We've cured another disease in mice. with something that we're not sure works in humans, I got to say. I mean, but it works through enhancing energy consumption by browning of adipocytes. This is the brown fat theory, which is what our capsaicin works on. The capsaicin from chili also works on brown fat,
and it helps to beat chili.
And it helps to beat chili. Being cold, cold exposure. Yeah, but eating chili, or in this case, capsaicin, which is you don't feel the burn. It's a capsaicinoid. Right. Capsaicin is one of our products that we use to support weight loss. So anyway, in this current study, researchers in Japan compared the mice fed with high-fat food supplemented with sulforaphane and the others with high-fat food but without sulforaphane in terms of their body weight. The researchers found that the mice fed with sulforaphane exhibited the weight gain rate that was 15% lower than that of the mice fed without sulforaphane. There was 20% visceral fat reduction and reduction in fatty liver and blood glucose. So, all right. So, I mean, this may be plausible for humans. It also, what it does is so it helps with brown fat.
Yeah.
It also say it helps to modify the gut bacterial flora. That's that microbiome theory of obesity.
The all important. Yes.
Yeah. Seems to do that. And
taking a fecal transplant from an obese person, putting it into a skinny person, and they can become fat.
But it also, you can alter your intestinal flora by taking certain things.
Yes.
So, you know, even cocoa is thought to have that beneficial effect on the flora.
Having a healthier diet overall is also going to help your microbiome.
Right.
Be more healthy. And
and on that same front, and you know, while we're on this digression, there's a big article in the New York Times this week, or maybe last week, which was on the subject of The Biggest Loser. And what happened with The Biggest Loser is they did a study on 14 contestants of The Biggest Loser, and they found that 13 of 14 regained most, if not all, of their weight, and some of them overshot the mark. They're heavier than they were. I think 4 out of 14 are heavier than they were.
That often happens with dieting.
13 out of 13 regained a ton of weight, if not all of their weight.
Mm-hmm.
Only one was able to sustain weight loss, but not at the level that they enjoyed on the program.
Mm-hmm.
And they highlighted one guy who went from like 300 and something. He lost 195 pounds, I think. Went down to 195. He looked normal during the show. So he was like the big winner, you know, blah, blah, blah. He is in trouble because he now can't consume more than 800 calories per day. And what they did, they really did a very formal scientific study of what happened to the metabolisms of these people. And they shocked their metabolism with exercise and draconian caloric restriction.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're kaput.
Mm-hmm.
They are, and it's not just a transient thing.
Right.
It's years later. Years later, they're gaining weight
mm-hmm.
with exercise and with very, very low calorie diets.
Well, in a nutshell,
yeah,
Mother Nature wants us to survive.
Yes.
So when she sees that we're chronically running away from predators, mm-hmm. aka exercise, mm-hmm. and there's only 800 calories a day available,
yeah,
she's going to make sure you stop losing weight at a certain point.
Yeah.
So what happens then? You've got kind of a new set point. Any time that you eat more calories thereafter, you're going to gain weight.
Yeah.
She wants you to survive and not die.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And when faced with famine,
yeah,
these survival mechanisms kick in.
Yeah.
I've actually seen this because I, you know, from my family history, you know, with immigrating from Europe, mm-hmm. You know, East European Jews, some of our relatives and acquaintances were actually concentration camp survivors. They had numbers on their arms.
Mm-hmm.
And many of them had were obese, suffered from diabetes or insulin resistance, and premature cardiovascular disease.
Wow.
Because they had undergone the most profound Biggest Loser reality
yeah.
show, which was, you know, Auschwitz or Belsen, you know, or, you know, one of those concentration camps.
Mm-hmm.
And they had, you know, first psychologically, you know, they probably never could pass up a meal or never, you know,
yeah.
could not clean up their plate, you know, but also metabolically, they were disadvantaged.
It's a scarcity mentality.
Mm-hmm.
It's like people who grew up in the Depression.
Yeah.
Then they suddenly later on become big spenders because we have the money now. We should spend it now, not put away for a rainy day. It's a scarcity mm-hmm. mentality. The same with food.
Mm.
It's that kind of a thing. And, you know, the other thing, going back to the Biggest Loser you were talking about, they wipe out their thyroids. That's another thing. If you're not getting ample
yep.
calories
yep.
and protein, eventually your metabolism is going to sink. That's your thyroid is kind of the master and commander of that.
Yeah.
So very, very important. Wow.
Anyway, so those are stories in the news of interest. And so let's get to some questions.
I have to continue.
Yeah,
sorry,
sure.
Dr.
Go. Hubbard. Okay.
800 calories a day is not sustainable.
Yeah.
And don't ever think, you know, a lot of these lose 40 pounds in 40 days or whatever the slogan might be.
Right.
These are the same type of deals because you can't go to day 41 on this kind of a
right.
diet. You are hungry and
yes.
cranky and starving, and it's not sustainable.
And this is why...
that's why diets don't work.
This is why that type of program is not innocent. You know, people
right.
would say, you know, it pays your money and it takes your chances. You know, and if you gain weight...
And a lot of money, apparently.
And if you gain weight, you know, it's your fault. But at least, you know, they offer a service and they get you to lose weight.
Yeah.
So, but actually, they're not only... not helping people, they're doing people a disservice because they're getting them to fling themselves headlong
yeah.
into a very draconian restriction that will damage their metabolism and will make it less likely that they can follow a reasonable program and
mm-hmm.
optimize their weight in the future. Plus, it's demoralizing, you know, to someone who's put a lot of faith in that process to see that process ultimately fail.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah. So, and a lot of these programs also provide you with some supplements, and you may walk away feeling like it's a magic bullet. It's not. It may provide some metabolic enhancement, just like some of the things we use, like chromium and
sulforaphane.
Sulforaphane now, EGCG, right.
Yeah.
Carnitine.
Right.
Maybe Tonalin, remember that?
CLA. Right, yeah.
Things of that nature. So
wait, you're undercutting our sales of diet products by saying that.
No.
All right.
So, and you know, I tell a lot of our patients who tell me, oh, but I've been on a 1,200 calorie a day diet and I'm not losing weight anymore. And I tell them exactly why,
yeah.
which is that.
Yeah.
It's too low and we are meant to keep Mother Nature guessing on a day-to-day basis. Yeah, some days you may eat 1,200, but the other days you're going to eat 1,750, and other days you're going to eat 2,500,
right.
and the following day it'll be 1,700 again. We're meant to keep Mother Nature guessing.
Yeah, I do a little, you know, routine with myself. It's hard because it's, mm-hmm. you know, deprivation is hard, but I do a little caloric restriction now and then where I'll, you know, go to bed early after eating an early dinner, and I'll go many hours before having a late Sunday brunch when I have the luxury of, see,
yeah.
I don't like to go to work on an empty stomach, clearly, because I'm going to be brain dead for my patients. But when
yeah.
I have the luxury and I don't have to report for work, I like to really extend it. So I might go 16, 18 hours without eating. That actually is good for the system.
Yes.
That's
the repair processes
yeah.
and our mitochondria get bigger. I do it a different way. And I'll typically do this on probably more times on a Sunday, where we'll have a later lunch, say at 3. Mm-hmm. And then I'm not eating again until breakfast the next morning, which is around 7.
That's discipline. Yeah.
So it's, but I also love the feeling of going to bed on a completely empty stomach. Mm. Sleep is better.
Yeah.
No blood sugar issues or anything at all from, and not going to bed. Even traditional Chinese medicine says that we should, you know, dinner should be at least 5 hours before bedtime. Hard to do. I mean, we'd all have to eat dinner at 4:30 or 5 o'clock, but
My mother spoiled that for me because she used to give me a Hostess Twinkie and a glass of milk before bed, you know, so it's kind of like
yodels.
Yodels. It's a comfort food.
Yeah.
Okay, that's all the time we have for today. Yeah, we've used up all our time digressing, and we don't have time for, no, we will take questions. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Let's take some questions.
Okay, all right. We've got an email from John. Dr. Hoffman, Layla, can you talk about resistant starch and how to prepare foods like potatoes and pasta? Okay. Into resistant starch.
So let me introduce the subject, and because this is a little bit like what we do in the office. I can provide the theory, and you can provide the practical implementation. So, you know, for a long time, I recommended the specific carbohydrate diet, and still do, because it's well substantiated for its benefits in ulcerative colitis and Crohn's disease.
Absolutely.
And the idea there is to avoid any indigestible starches. Mm-hmm. So you can eat certain simple sugars, and you get some carbs, but it's mostly lower carb. No grains, no certain starches that are indigestible, and that's generally the idea. A guy named Peter Gibson, who's at Monash University in Australia, who actually is the originator of what's called the low FODMAP diet, came up with something called Gibson's Conundrum. And it's interesting because what he's saying is that, okay, great, you know, you may ameliorate symptoms with a low FODMAP or an SCD diet. Low FODMAP diet is similar in a lot of ways to the SCD diet, and it helps gastro symptoms, and great.
Yes.
However, one of the keys to healing in an inflamed gut circumstance is butyrate, or short-chain fatty acids.
Yes.
The way to get short-chain fatty acids into you is you can rectally instill them, but they'll only go up a couple inches. Or you can take an oral pill, which doesn't work very well, according to studies. There's not a lot of studies supporting that. Or you can eat resistant starch, but that's not SCD legal. So that's called Gibson's conundrum, which is that on the very diet that seems to relieve symptoms, we may be depriving people of a substrate for bacteria to break down the starch. And the bacteria do this conversion. They convert the starch into short-chain fatty acids, which are beneficial in healing for the gut.
Yes.
So this causes us to sometimes modify the diet of patients with ulcerative colitis, especially to facilitate healing in the large intestine.
Right.
It's more of a large intestine issue than a small intestine issue.
I think what John is getting at here, because he specifies potatoes and pasta, resistant starch is also used to blunt blood sugar
response. Yes, beneficial for weight loss, potentially. Yeah.
It's almost like taking a Welbedex, PGX, a type of fiber supplement before you eat. So these resistant starches, and he asks, can you reheat them to retain the resistant starch? There was a study. First of all, the way to eat these resistant starches, the way you're talking about an SCD, and to blunt blood sugar, can be, first of all, if you're having pasta, you have to cook it to not more than al dente. It's a lower glycemic index. However, how the resistant starch formation in that and potatoes works is by chilling the food after you've cooked it.
It's a little kitchen chemistry. It's something, there's a chemical reaction that
occurs. It's like an Alton Brown thing for Food Network or the food chemist guy.
Oh,
Alton
Brown
on Food Network.
Oh.
Anyway, so the way to get the resistant starch, the molecules realign to become resistant starch in the chilling of that food, like potatoes, like also white beans, which can be legal on SCD. And for the pasta, chilling in that regard too. John is asking, can you reheat them? There was a study a while back that said you can cook it, cool it, chill it, and then reheat it again, and the resistant starch may still remain as long as you're not overly reheating it, because, I suppose.
Because the cold potatoes or cold beans.
Yeah,
I mean, I guess you could potato salad. You could make a, can you make
you
a potato salad?
You can make a potato salad, absolutely.
Can you put some seasoning on that, like a little mayo or turmeric or something like that?
What I, the, my favorite way to make a potato salad, especially with the red skin potatoes, is to add dill, some chopped parsley, some red onion or scallion, toss it in a little olive oil, maybe a few drops of vinegar.
And,
that,
and that's a way to get your resistant starch in.
Yeah.
You take you heat, you hit, cook the potatoes, you cool them down, and then you mix them with these other ingredients.
Right, right.
Right. That sounds good. That's, like a, that's like a German potato salad.
Oh, that's like a German potato salad without mayonnaise.
Okay.
Much. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
But a lot more seasoned stuff.
Okay.
So there's resistant starch, besides the formation of short-chain fatty acids, is also to blunt blood sugar. A lot of people, they miss their pasta and their potatoes, and they're trying to find different ways to eat them or keep them in their diet without suffering any undue damage from erratic blood sugar.
Okay,
that may be a way, but you know, keep your portions small.
It is also said, and I don't have direct experience on this, but I'm reading the research. They can also use green bananas, which is sounds weird, but you can you cook them? Or does it have to be raw?
You're talking about plantains or bananas.
Well, green bananas or plantains are green.
Right.
And I was in a Dominican restaurant. I just fell into that because I was in Brooklyn. I looked, looking for a place to
plantains
eat.
Plantains are good.
And they had plantains there. Uh-huh. And they said, would you like them green or would you like them fried? I don't know. So I guess. And green is very sort of bland, but you know, if it's if you're used to it, it's a good source of the resistant starch.
Yeah.
And then
green is better because when the banana is green, not a plantain, but a banana, I know, is more starchy.
Right.
And that's why on something like the specific carbohydrate diet, you have to wait
until the banana becomes very ripe.
Turns to sugar.
Right. But then you
it's
lose.
Brown.
So that's an example of where the legal thing is not as beneficial in terms of generating short-chain fatty acids.
Right. So a lot of nuances here in therapeutic diets.
Yeah.
And all of that to treat these various conditions.
So question for you is, you're on the business end of talking to some of our patients with ulcerative colitis and Crohn's disease.
Yeah.
Are you getting a sense that they're responding well when we modify their diet to include resistant starch?
Yes. And in the scenarios where they're not in a flare, they're not an acute patient, you know, our Crohn's and ulcerative colitis patients, they come to us in a flare.
Yes.
Or when
often.
It's acute.
Right.
We get all that under control first. So they really have to start with phase one. And there would be no resistant starch there at all.
Okay.
So phase one, and they progress.
It's more for maintaining remission.
Exactly.
But also,
when they're no longer symptomatic and they can liberalize their diet,
But also relieve the monotony.
That's true.
And
some potatoes and white beans would be nice.
And over the years, you've acquired a little bit of a sense of when to hold and when to fold with adding those things.
Exactly.
Not to add them prematurely.
When the patient is no longer on medication and their condition is pretty well in remission, their bowel habits are very predictable, no urgency, everything is fine, I'll say, you know what? Try adding some chilled potatoes.
It makes sense because they have to have the right kind of bacteria to act upon the starch.
True. That's
and if
true.
They don't, if they have terrible dysbiosis, then they won't have the right bacteria to create the butyrate.
Right.
So you want to repopulate their intestine with the right.
Exactly.
Yeah,
at that point, when they're not well, it's just creating more fermentation, which is exactly what you don't want.
And bloating.
Exactly.
A lot of bloating.
It's like giving somebody with SIBO prebiotics. That's not the time to give them prebiotics.
Yes.
You have to wipe out the bad bacteria first. Otherwise, the bad bacteria is feeding on those prebiotics.
So you're developing a sense of that. That's good. The other ingredient that is sometimes mentioned is what's called modified potato starch. Or unmodified. Is it modified or it's potato starch.
Potato flour.
Potato
starch. Which is kind of like the same thing.
Bob's Red Mill makes that.
Yes.
So what's your experience with that?
Oh, yeah. My husband tried cooking with this potato starch. making a homemade pasta from it.
Right.
Very starchy pasta. But more detrimental, or more to our surprise, is We couldn't get the stuff off the pan or from the pot. It was ridiculous. And it's not like there wasn't any fat present, like some olive oil or some butter.
It's like
or
cement.
Something like that.
Yeah.
It's like cement. Mm. And I couldn't help but wonder, what's this doing in our intestines?
It's like
it's
when
like
we
paper
made
mache
we used
or
to
something.
Make volcanoes at home out of flour, you know,
yes,
like with
yes,
some
yes.
kind of like some mixture that made
yeah.
like, and when it hardened, it was like a rock.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
So the stuff was a little bit. We didn't do that again.
Okay.
We didn't do that anymore.
All right. So we're not necessarily recommending.
We're down to boiling potatoes and making a very nice potato salad, or just eating boiled potatoes.
Okay.
Or boiled potatoes tossed in butter. That was one of my favorites growing up.
Good.
In my house.
All right.
Okay.
So.
John, thank you for your question.
Yeah, so we're running a little short on time for part one, so let's preview part two.
Mm.
What are we going to be fielding in part two in terms of questions?
Can you comment on Sambucus elderberry immune syrup for colds and viral infections?
Okay. Lots of people coming down with colds this time of year because of the season change, and so we'll comment on Sambucus. Or Sambuca. Sambuca is actually, it's a drink, isn't it? Sambuca.
Oh, Sambuca is, yeah, it's a drink. It's an anise
yeah.
type of liquor.
Right. It's nothing to do with this.
No. It's okay. More like a digestive after
right. yeah.
a nice meal.
Great. So let's pause, and when we return, part two of today's Q&A with Layla. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman today with Hoffman Center Nutritionist Layla Mudin, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.